Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 125 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's undedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. We're sitting here this morning, Sunday morning, the day after the night before, which saw Everton fall to a 1-0 defeat to the champions, Manchester City. I think there's only one place to start, and that's right at the end of the game. And the so-called, well, the penalty that wasn't given, one of the most atrocious decisions I've seen since last week against Southampton. Pete, he was raising his arm about the decision that wasn't given.
Do you know what? I think I'm still more in disbelief. I think the rage will probably hit me in about 2 weeks when I realised that that decision wasn't given. It was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I felt robbed yesterday leaving the game. I just felt so much for the players because I thought we were outstanding. I just thought across the pitch, you know, man for man, every single one of them, they were just brilliant. And you could see it was the result of, you know, real hard work on the training pitch and real teamwork. And it felt like a real Everton performance, you know, from start to finish. And I just felt so hard done by. And it's so frustrating at this level. You know, Premier League, it's the highest level in world football. And we should have the highest level, you know, of officiating if we've got the highest level of play. And I mean, it's hard to know where to start. There's just so many things wrong with the decision. And for me, why just doesn't go and look at the screen and take 15 seconds and see it for himself? You know, Paul Tierney, you know, he's the lead referee. He's the lead official in the game. Go and look at the screen. It's a penalty decision. You know, own it. Don't listen to your mate in the van when, you know, you clearly didn't see it yourself. It's just despicable. And you know, although I am in disbelief, that decision, it was just in fitting with the way the game was officiated to me. It just felt like sort of every 50-50 went in their favour, really. You know, lots of sort of niggly fouls. I mean, they played the classic Manchester City, didn't they? You know, break down our play in our half so they don't get the yellow, because the ref won't give them a yellow if they make the professional foul in our half. You know, which is clever, but it's frustrating because time and time again, it would come into Richarlison at the top of our half, and Llorente or Rodri would just essentially throw him to the floor and then walk off without getting a yellow card. So maybe I shouldn't be surprised in a way, but, you know, hopefully it's a decision that doesn't cost us, and hopefully it's something that can ignite the players and get them to play as well as they did on Saturday when we faced Spurs on Monday.
I think the really sad, well, not the sad thing about it, the most frustrating thing about it was every single person in that ground watching at home didn't even need the replay to see it was a handball. His arm comes well away from his body, so straight away, an unnatural position. So it's not as if, that's not obviously he could have just carried on with his arms by his side, but he couldn't have got to the ball. So that's meant he's then got to the ball with his arm. Now, the official decision, there's a bit of confusion. I know apparently American TV networks were showing that Richarlison was offside in the build-up, which he wasn't. So that was clarified that wasn't the case. He wasn't offside because the lines that they drew were wrong anyway. And obviously we've got a bit more margin now in terms of in favour of the attacker when he comes to draw the line. So Richarlison wasn't offside. So the reason it was given was that when they make these decisions, they have the green zone and the red zone on in terms of the actual player itself. And the ball basically was more in the green zone, if you like, or the red zone, whatever way around it is. So it wasn't handball. Now, quite clear from replays that the ball struck him on the arm below where his sleeve ends, which is where what they look at. So I don't see how you can get it so wrong. And like you said then, Pete, the referee's got to use the screen. The referee hasn't got to be told, by the way, to go and use the screen. The referee can decide to go and use the screen. And in that situation, like you say, the lead official, he should be saying, I'm going to go over, I'm going to have a look. If it's not, it's not. But the reason that this technology is being brought in is to eradicate this kind of nonsense. We saw it last week against Southampton, which was just as bad. We see it again against Manchester City in about, what, the 84th minute of the game. So we've gone 1-0 behind recently. We try to obviously take the games in a little bit. We've won a Stonewall penalty and they're not using what they've got available to make the right decision. And this is where seasons hinge on, these kind of decisions. Now, what happens if we get to the end of the season and just for argument's sake, we're relegated by a point? What happens? Nothing happens. And that's the thing about it. There's no ramifications. We'll see Paul Tierney and we'll see Chris Kavanagh yet again. We'll be officiating next weekend, I'm sure. Probably be doing the Tottenham game, one of them, on Monday night. And that's the thing. They're not held accountable for such poor decision-making. And it's no surprise to me, leader Frank Lampard, after the game, came out. He's going to be fined. He's going to be sanctioned, whatever you want to do. He came out and he was just so honest about the situation. And said his 3-year-old daughter at home could have seen that was a handball.
Yeah, massively, mate. I mean, you know, one thing I've really liked about Lampard so far since he's come to us is the way he's so honest. Like, you know, in his press conferences, in his post-match interviews, and he was nothing but honest after the game. You know, he was absolutely bang on with those comments. You know, he basically turned around and said that's incompetence at best. And if it's not incompetence, then what is it? You know what I mean? And fair play to him, because a lot of managers are obviously scared to say what they want to say. And you know, for me, if he gets fined for that, which he probably, like you said, he's probably going to, then it's a disgrace. He's got every right to call it out there. He's got every single right to call that out. And fair play to Ashley Cole as well for going right over and having a right go at Tierney as well. Now, to be fair, I'll give a bit of leniency to Tierney because he did say to Lampard after the game that I was the wrong side. If you look at it, he is the wrong side of the ball, so he can't necessarily see if it did clip his arm. But then, obviously, as soon as it goes straight to VAR, and like you said, Mike, you know, there's a common misconception that the VAR official, Kavanagh, has to say, "Yo, you've got to go to the monitor and have a look." He's in charge of the game. He's on the field. If he says, "All right, if you're unsure, it's taking you 2 minutes to check this," by the way, when every single pundit, every single person, like you said, watching the game can see in like 15 seconds it's a handball. So why has he not just said that if you're unsure, let me go and have a look? And he's not. I mean, that's a disgrace in itself. It's absolutely unbelievable. But you are right. As the ball bounces, it does spin slightly, doesn't it? Because obviously Richarlison's gone through. It's ballooned up off the keeper, so it's got a bit of spin on it. And as it's bounced, it has spun away from his chest. And he's panicked, doesn't he? He's absolutely panicked. And he's gone like that deliberately to try and bring the ball down. And he knows what he's done because his second action is to try and launch it. You know, launch the ball out. And then he immediately looks at the referee like as if to say, "Oh, no, what have I done?" You know what I mean? And then it's the most obvious decision you've ever seen. It's unbelievable. And the most annoying thing is, in a way, though, is, like you mentioned, against Southampton last week, that got nothing, did it, in terms of headlines? Zero. Zilch. Well, guess why? Because it's a bit of a nothing game. You know, I mean, it's not deciding a title this, so therefore we won't give it any sort of TV time. You know, these sort of things should be notched up, as if to say, like, what are you doing to improve this? You know what I mean? And as we know with Kavanagh, though, he's got previous with Everton. You know, it's been obviously sent around social media. That offside goal, we all remember with Sigurdsson when he was sitting on the floor, which didn't obstruct David De Gea. That would have been a last-minute winner against United. That horrendous penalty decision in the 0-0 against Spurs, again this season. You know what I mean? And that was given as a penalty and it was overturned, wasn't it? You know what I mean? You know, clear and obvious error. You know, he clearly... Unbelievable. I mean, the guy's got previous and he should never, for me now, after that decision, should never be allowed to officiate at the highest level this season. Because if there's no deterrent for these referees, if there's no deterrent for them, they can just get on with it and just get on with it every single week, making absolutely shocking decisions. Because otherwise, if he's looking at that and goes... Right, if I make a howler here, that's me refereeing the Championship or Division One now for the next, you know, 3 months, 4 months. Then they're going to be like, I better get this right. There's no deterrent for them. And for me as well, I've said this all along, with VAR, it shouldn't be their mate in the van, like Pete said. It shouldn't be them. There should be a completely different, neutral team, whether it's maybe, you know, ex-referees from Spain, Germany, Italy, whatever, just totally unaffiliated with the current referee crop. It shouldn't be this... like their work colleague in the van. Do you know what I mean? And also, and I've been saying this for ages, and I think they're about to trial it in France, that there should be dialect as well. We've got to be able to hear what the VAR official is saying to the official, and it needs to be played to the people on TV and, to more importantly, to the people in the ground. It needs to be communication. If we could hear what they're saying, then we'd have a much better idea of their decision-making process.
Well, the baffling thing was that the decision actually, it didn't go on the screen to explain, did it, why the penalty wasn't given, which is the first time that that's happened this season, is involving ourselves. So when you see all this talk, and people say it's an overreaction and it's not the case, when you see all this talk and comments surrounding corruption, that's exactly why. You know, this system's been brought in to make things easier for the on-field referee. And like I said before, eradicate this kind of issue where they're getting obvious things wrong. And then when you don't even bother to justify it, your decision on the screen, which is the only communication that fans in the ground have got, what chance have you got? You know, fans at home were making their own mind up. No one heard about the offside. Offside was not mentioned on the Sky Sports coverage. Offside wasn't part of it. But then you got fans, you know, on the other side of the world who were being told that offside was the reason why it wasn't given. But like I said, it wasn't a case of decision, no handball, reason offside. It was no handball, basically, because it wasn't handball. You know, and that was the reason. That was the reason given. The fact that the officials on the field came off and said to Frank Lampard, you know, yeah, we thought it was a pen. Now, are they saying that after seeing footage, or are they saying that come off the pitch? When, well, if you thought it was a pen, give it then. And then it'll go to VAR, and if it wasn't, it'll be overturned. So if you, I know you said he didn't see, he's on the wrong side. I'm not being funny. If you're behind it, you can still see his arm was miles away, and you can
still see
on the other side. So, but it could have been given on the field, and it could have been overturned. So for me, you know, the balance of probability was, even from that angle, it's a handball. So if the whole thing was just totally, totally wrong, and that's why you see these shouts of corruption that come in, from fans when it affects them so much.
Yeah, we don't want to go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole, do we? But I do see what you mean. I mean, when you see decisions like that, I mean, very, you know, normally in like Match of the Day, Sky, BT, whatever, there'll always be sometimes like a mixed bag of opinions, won't there? Like, oh yeah, that wasn't a pen, or that was a pen, or, you know, fouls, for example, are a bit more subjective. But when it's clear like that, like a handball, and like Lampard even said himself, my three-year-old child, like you said, Mike, could have spotted it. Then, and there wasn't one pundit that has come out and said, "Oh yeah, yeah, that was the debatable pen." That every single one of them has said it. Every single one of them. So that for me then tells you where you need to stand. I mean, I know what you said there, Mike. Yeah, he should still be able to spot it. The problem you've got now though is that refs, because of VAR, they almost overly rely on it as well, don't they? You know, so he's not giving it straight away, thinking, "Well, it's going to get reviewed. It's going to get reviewed."
Yeah, they hide behind it, and that's
yeah, they do.
So it's okay hiding behind a system that works or is run by competent people, but when it's not, you can't hide behind it. So you still got it. That's the problem. Referees nowadays don't officiate a game. They rely on the technology, and that's where the problem comes in. So the responsibility, the referees nowadays almost just throw the responsibility to someone else and say, yeah, not my problem. And that, I think, is in the minds of officials nowadays when VAR is in play. Because we've seen it where, when in the FA Cup, for example, when you don't play a game at a Premier League ground and VAR is not in use, which, again, is incredible in itself. But you see the standard of refereeing, and it's poor because they haven't got that to fall back on, because they've been so used to having this technology in Premier League games that they struggle then, because they've been asked to actually think and officiate a game. And the standard of refereeing, you know, we said this, I think, over the last sort of two years particularly, has gone rapidly downhill. And, you know, mentioned earlier, you know, Donny van der Beek was booked for a fantastic tackle in the first half. Referee was saying it was his second foul, it wasn't. So he's booked, you know, and Alan got booked for dissent. I think the little niggly things just didn't go Everton's way at all. And we even saw Ashley Cole get booked after the game as well, which was just incredible. And I know it's football's an emotional game. We're in a difficult position, you know, but like I said, seasons, you know, are won and lost or are dictated to by this kind of decision going your way or not going your way. You know, City could win the league by a couple of points because of that decision. You know, we don't want to see Liverpool win the league, but that's what could happen. You know, it's fine margins, but when you understand when things aren't given, when it's a difficult decision and it's open for interpretation, that wasn't open for interpretation. And he's got it bang wrong between the referee on the field, between the assistant referee down that end, between Chris Kavanagh. All of those combined have got that wrong. And all we'll hear is tomorrow morning, Dermot Gallagher will be on Sky Sports saying, oh yeah, I think it was a penalty. But then we'll see them next weekend refereeing. And that's the problem.
Well, that's what I said before, Mike. That it's there's no deterrent. Yeah, I mean, there's no deterrent into, you know, it's not his first offence either. That's the problem. So there needs to be a deterrent. You know what I mean? And also, I know it sounds petty as hell and a bit sort of like, you know, like, but, you know, a Manchester ref as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why is he in VAR? You've got Manchester City playing, you know, a team from Liverpool. You know what I mean? Why? I mean, that's just a complete basics in itself. That creates conspiracy theories just by that alone. I mean, never mind a contentious decision. But if you saw Liverpool, I think we saw Liverpool Leeds in the week, they got a penalty for exactly the same thing. I don't know whether you guys saw it. Get exactly the same type of handball that happened when it bounced up and he tried a chest and it hit his arm. No complaints. No complaints whatsoever. In fact, it was given by the on-field ref. It didn't even go to VAR. You know what I mean? It was just given straight away. So, yeah, I mean, we're going back to the game Pete mentioned there. I think you bang on there, Pete. I think since Lampard's come in there, I know he's had some indifferent results, particularly away from home, early doors. And we've all said, look, he's not going to wave a magic wand. But one thing I can definitely see, him and his team, you can see there's a coaching going on here, isn't there? Do you know what I mean? You can clearly see that the team is being set up, it's being coached. We're trying to play a different style of football. And that's really pleasing to see for me at the minute. There's certainly early shoots and early signs that were, you know, that there's clearly a plan in place here. There's a style of football being developed. Players are more comfortable in possession already. That's noticeable. You know, even in tight spaces, I know City are one of the best pressing teams in the league. And certainly first half, I thought we were a lot calmer on the ball. You know what I mean? We were passing it through midfield. We weren't always going long to Richarlison. The ball, when it was going into Richarlison, overall, I think he did really well. I mean, he was a nuisance to them all day against some top centre-halves there as well. I thought he had an outstanding game. I thought, you know, the midfield three were outstanding. All three of them were brilliant. I mean, credit to Decore coming back after a layoff and then playing like that. I mean, the guy's an energizer, Ben, incredible. I thought Alan was given the license, as we've always said, isn't it, to push on and knowing he's got cover behind him. He was outstanding yesterday. I think man of the match for me, Alan yesterday, absolutely outstanding. I mean, breaking up play, winning tackles. You know, that burst past Rodri, I thought, it's Alan 10 years ago, that. And, you know, it's such a shame that, because it was a lovely pass into Kenny. And if you just needed a...
Yeah, It was a shame it was John Joe Kenny. That was the biggest issue.
And with a left foot, Mike, anyone with a left foot buries that in the bottom corner.
I would have scored. You know what my left foot's like? I would have put that in the bottom corner across the keeper.
It's debatable that. I mean, you'd have probably ballooned it over, but do you know what I mean? It's like, that's what I mean. I mean, they were outstanding. And Van der Beek, I mean, and I know he obviously wasn't, you know, the whole team was poor against Southampton, let's have it right. But I thought Van der Beek, I just said to you off air there, Pete, I think he's a complete midfielder, isn't he? He's good on the ball. He's nice on the eye. He keeps it. He does the basics really well. Typical Ajax school, you know, very good technically. But I like his aggression as well. He's not scared to put his foot in. And like you said, Mike, that yellow card was a disgrace. Because obviously it wasn't a penalty that on Alan. We know that because he got straight back up. There was a bit of contact, but there wasn't enough to go down. But then he puts in a great tackle. It was on De Bruyne, I think, possibly, was it? Or Rodri, possibly. I can't remember. But anyway, it was a great tackle. And then he gets booked for it. And you're just thinking, what on earth? I mean, he's absolutely gone in there legally, took the ball, and obviously the man's fell over him. And he's booked him. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. But you know what? In terms of how we've been playing, particularly at home, the fans have been outstanding. The fans have been outstanding. And Frank alluded that at the minute. Since I've come in, he said it feels a lot more joined up, didn't he? Mm. From obviously the board to the management staff to the players to the fans. He said it all feels joined up now. And that Goodison there, it was the same with Goodison against Leeds the other week. You know, dare I say it, you know, there's early signs that we're getting our Everton back, aren't we?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it's you know, we know what Frank Lampard's been brought in to do. We know the position that we're in. But I think seeing the performances we put in against Brentford, Leeds and Manchester City probably especially, you can see there's progress there for me. I mean, like you said, that first half at times, okay, there was a couple of times where we might have maybe overplayed and tried to counter the back, you know, a little bit too much when we shouldn't have done, but the players are trying it, and the only way to get better at doing it is to keep on doing it. You know, you look at that, and at times we're, you know, and we open them up. You know, you talk about the chance we had for John Joe Kenny, but there was other opportunities as well. Like Richarlison one in the first half, he's seen a defender come in behind him, and he snatched at the ball, didn't catch it properly, and went right at Edison. You know, there was other chances there for us, especially in the first half, and you can see the players understanding now more and more the role on the side and what they should be doing. You know, everyone yesterday, he was involved in some way, shape or form to put a shift in. You know, we're going to have to talk about the goal. Obviously, it came pretty late on, 80th minute, and the ball wasn't the ball. Michael Keane, Pete, are we apportioning any kind of blame to Michael Keane there? Or was it one of those situations where he just couldn't adjust his feet because he was off balance?
I've got to admit, I had a terrible view of this from where I was sat in the stadium, because I sit just to the right of the halfway. So although I could see the ball sort of come across the box and I could see there was some kind of mix-up, I didn't have a brilliant view of it real time. And I've been so, let's say, cheesed off about the result. I've not watched the highlights back yet. So I've not seen this goal close up.
Yeah, Pete, it's a tricky one with Keane. I thought Keane and Holgate did well, by the way. I thought they played well. Well, the whole team played well as a whole, but I thought those two guys did well. And it's such a tricky one because it's that deflection off Holgate. It's a poor ball by Bernardo Silva, first of all. He's not picked anybody out. And Holgate's obviously, you know, tried to intercept it. I don't know what you think, Pete, but I feel for Keane there. I really do, because it's that deflection, his weight's all going the other way, isn't it? His weight's all on his left foot, because obviously he's expecting that's where the ball's coming. That last minute deflection means he's completely, you know, he's flummoxed. I mean, look, strictly speaking, he should be nimble enough on his toes to be able to sort of react to it and kick it out for a corner, possibly. But the fact his weight's all going the other way, I mean, it's really unfortunate, that. Really unfortunate. And obviously, you know, not only that, he's flicked it straight into Foden's path, and it's basically an open goal after that. But he's getting a lot of stick, and he is a bit of a scapegoat, Michael. But and I'm not saying he's Franco Baresi by any means. He's not. We know that. But I felt for him a little bit there, because overall I thought him and Holgate had a good game yesterday. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because with us, we never seem to concede good goals, if you want to put it like that. It was a difficult game for us yesterday, and I've said this before, when you come up against sides where you're looking all under the previous manager, where we were looking to sort of defend for 90 minutes, you've got to be switched on at all times, and it only takes one little moment where you're not fully concentrated or you're not switched on. But I don't think personally you can blame anyone for that. Maybe stop the first cross, maybe, you know, Holgate tried to stop the ball and it's flicked off his studs. I just think Keane was off balance, they're really doing it. And if we've been there, you know, we've all played football ourselves. And, you know, when that does happen, when you're expecting the ball to go one way and it doesn't, it's so hard to adjust. It really is. And, you know, it's a horrible goal to concede. It was not deserved, you know, and it was just typical of the way things are going for us at this moment in time. And I don't want to really sit there and apportion blame to anyone. I think it's difficult. I don't think it was lack of concentration. I don't think it was not about being switched on. It was just unfortunate that it's deflected the way that it has.
I think the irony is that it doesn't take that deflection off Holgate. It gets cleared easily. If you look where the ball's going, it's going to a blue shirt. Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously Holgate's not to know that. He's obviously trying to intercept it. That's fine. But you know, sometimes in footy, I mean, you know, that's a bit of luck that you need. And there was no other way I think they were scoring yesterday. I mean, second half, they stepped it up. They were obviously switching play a lot quicker. You know, the Everton players must have been out on their feet, to be fair, because they put an absolute shift in. And it always is tough against City because you're chasing the ball. You have to be fully concentrated for 90 minutes because the way they move the ball around. And I thought they put in an incredible performance, incredible shift. And, you know, it was a bit of fortune that done it. I mean, and also special mention to Jordan Pickford as well, because when he was called upon, particularly that double save firstly from De Bruyne, and that second one from Silva was outstanding. He was actually going the other way, wasn't he? And he stuck his right arm out, and that's a hell of a save, that. And I thought Pickford yesterday was outstanding. His distribution was good as well. I thought he played really, really well. But like I was saying before, you know, there's clearly an identity developing now in terms of how Frank wants us to play, you know, and arguably against the best side in Europe, you know, we weren't scared to press them high up the pitch, were we, yesterday either? And that was really pleasing to see. The amount of times we played City in the Cup at Goodison last year, and, you know, let's be fair, it was pretty much backs against the wall for 90 minutes job, wasn't it? You know what I mean? Just sitting in a shape. You know, we were a lot braver than that yesterday. The amount of times we saw our midfield pushing into their half to try and pressure them on the ball and then sprinting back to try and obviously cover the space and, you know, and get goal side again. And I thought, like I said, there's a real identity developing there. And I just hope we can just, like Frank alluded to, really, look, ignore the table now. And I've been saying this now. Now's not the time to panic. Ignore the table for the next three, four weeks. Let's get these games in hand done. And then let's assess it then. And that'll be our true position then after that.
Yeah, we spoke about it last week, didn't we? Obviously, we've got a big week coming up in March, which sees games against Wolves, Newcastle and Watford. They're going to be pivotal to our season. But what you mentioned there about finding an identity, which we obviously say this all the time, about Everton have had an identity for years, but we're now starting to see that. And I think yesterday, where, you know, we saw this midfield three, with the three players that you'd want to be in that midfield three, to be honest with you, you know, Doucouré back in, Alan with a bit more of a licence, and Van der Beek as well. We seem to now, looking at that and how well we played yesterday, that seems to be the way forward. And we're going to discuss that after the short break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. We were going to have a discussion around the tactics that we saw on show at Goodison Park against Manchester City, and us playing this 4-4-3-3 formation. We weren't too far away from, you would probably argue, our best 11 in terms of in that formation. Obviously, Dominic Calvert-Lewin failed a league fitness test, is out for around 7 to 10 days. He can't seem to get any kind of break when it comes to injuries. You'd think, obviously, Damari Gray and Mikhailenko would probably come in to a 4-3-3 system. And, you know, when he's back fit, Ben Godfrey, we can't rely really on Yerry Mina. He could be done until April, even the end of the season. So looking at that and looking at that formation, Peter, is that the way you want to go? You want to go forward now with obviously the games you've got coming up? Do you think that's going to be our best formation and our best way out of the predicament that we found ourselves in?
You'd absolutely think so, wouldn't you? I mean, it seems to be the best way of accommodating the personnel and our best players into 1-11. And the difference in performance is night and day. I mean, I thought we matched City. Yes, they had far more of the ball, but I thought man for man, we were just as good and really gave them a game. And I think for any side to say that against Manchester City and to shut them out for over 80 minutes, it's extremely impressive. So I thought they were brilliant. And I thought the midfield three just worked so well together. And, you know, like Lee was saying earlier, Alan looked like a different player. He looked like a different player. He was just able to do that job, screening the back four. When he got on the ball, he was able to go forward, and he had just that little bit of freedom and a bit more space to sort of run out with it and find a pass. And it just helps the whole team shape, you know, to move and get up the pitch. And I absolutely think we'll definitely see a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, because I suppose he's got that option as well, hasn't he, to have to double pivot and, you know, to use sort of Dele as a, I guess, what we might call a 10. So I think if we can keep players fit, we should absolutely be picking up points in the remainder of these games. But it's how the team will respond to the psychological blow of putting in a performance like that and losing the game and losing it so unjustly. And, you know, can we sort of use that in the right way on Monday?
I think Lampard will spin that on its head, Pete. I think he used that as fuel to motivate them, really, isn't it? Because, you know, I think he'll go in that dressing room and say to the lads, look, I'm proud of you there today, boys. Not only have you obviously, you know, played well against one of the best sides in Europe here, it's the way you've played. It's the way we've played. We didn't just sit off and defend our 18-yard box for 90 minutes, like I was saying. Yes, they had a bit of a spell in the second half. First half, we more than gave as good as we got, and arguably had probably the clearest chance in that chance for Richarlison as well. Not many teams restrict City to that. Not many teams do it. And look, I know Spurs beat them last week, and they beat them last week playing not too dissimilar, actually, in terms of, you know, being tough to break down, closing down the spaces, but then showing quality. You know, if we had had that little bit more composure and quality in the final third, maybe we could have nicked a couple of goals like Spurs did. But obviously, you know, Harry Kane was, like we said last week, was outstanding in that game. And arguably the difference, you know, between the two sides. But yeah, I totally agree with that three in midfield now. I mean, we've been talking about it. All fans have been talking about it for ages, haven't we? You know, can we get that three in midfield there? And they all complement each other. They've all got slightly different attributes. And if we can keep those three guys fit now, between now and the end of the season, almost more than anywhere else on the pitch, really, if we can keep those three guys fit, I think we'll control a lot more games. We will control a lot more games, definitely. And I was really pleased the way they played yesterday. And the staff there have got every right to say to the players after the game there, hold your heads up high there, boys. Hold your heads up high, because you more than deserved a point out of that game.
Yeah, I don't think the players are going to come away, or they definitely shouldn't come away after the game yesterday feeling downhearted. By all means, you know, you should be, you know, it was unjust. We should have probably got a point from the game, and their efforts certainly deserved that. But I think if they look back, and I'm sure they will, in saying and go through the performance and break it down, each and every one of those players should be proud of what they've done there. And, you know, there was moments of quality. Like we said earlier on, you could see in that setup the players were being brave at times, which you've got to be against Man City. We certainly couldn't just go long, because there was no Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Richarlison is not obviously as good in the air, but as we said earlier on, when Richarlison had his back to goal and the ball was played into his feet, he drew the fouls really well. And he made Diaz commit, which is exactly what you want to see. But that system just seems to be a little bit more control, you know, whether it be in an attacking centre and being brave, or also in a defensive setup. And the players just seem to be, you know, they were flexible within the setup, but they were holding the relevant position. They were making it difficult for Manchester City. And, you know, when you lose a game 1-0 to a real scruffy, unlucky goal, as we did. And, okay, Jordan Pickford made a couple of outstanding saves, that double save in the second half, the pick of the bunch. But you wouldn't say he was peppered. You wouldn't say he was under loads of pressure during the game, you know. And that shows you that the setup that the manager has brought out yesterday was the right thing to do. And with those personnel in that midfield three, I'd say, specifically, it shows you what we can do going forward. And in that setup, I think we you know, that setup and that intensity beats many teams in this league. That's the important thing to remember. You know, we've got games in hand. We know, I mean, obviously we prefer points on the board, but we've got games in hand against sides in and around us. And I've got to say, if we go in with a 4-3-3 and we, you know, we can bring a couple of players back in as well with a little bit more quality, Damari Gray, I'm sure will come in. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Mikhailenko will get his time. Ben Godfrey's not far away from being back to full fitness. All these players can come in, will improve the quality. You've got Dele Alli chomping at the bit now to try and get a start in that side as well. Then, you know, I think that we will cause issues for a lot of sides that we're due to face for the remainder of the season. But like you said, Lee, I think it's, the manager alluded to it, it's important that we've got to be calm. Don't get too drawn into the league table at this moment in time. Let's play our games in hand, first of all. Let's see where we are in, say, 2-3 weeks' time. And then we can assess and we can then go forward. But I think a lot of sort of relies on the energy of the team. And the most impressive thing that I've seen since Frank Lampard came in, obviously his coaching staff, is an increase in intensity. I know we haven't been great away from home, but the first sort of 15 minutes against Southampton, I thought we played with an intensity and you could see what we were trying to do. Again, I think it's mentality with us. That's going to be a big shift. And, you know, when you, things don't go your way, you know, a decision doesn't go your way in a game and heads go down, that's what it's sort of hinged on, I think, in that game. But the real change in intensity has been the big thing for me. And in that formation, when you've got players who are quite dynamic, the likes of Decore in midfield coming back in, Alan being allowed to go further forward, Van der Beek is all action. And you've got the pace on the wing with Anthony Gordon, Damari Gray, Richarlison, you know, Iwobi. We didn't mention Iwobi when he closed down, I think, every single Man City player in the space of 30 seconds after he lost the ball yesterday. Now, would you have seen Alex Iwobi do that 6-7 weeks ago? I wouldn't have thought so. So, you know, this system, I think, caters to a lot of our strengths and a lot of the strengths of the players.
I think the word Pete used, you've been using, Pete, when we were under Rafa, was the word passive, wasn't it? I think that's the word, passive. And we're certainly not passive under this manager.
uncomfortably passive though as well. It didn't suit the players, did it? Like we said so many times on the podcast, we don't have the squad or the team to play that kind of football. You know, sit back, soak it up, and you know, feel lucky if you get something out of the game. And it's not the right mentality for us. So I mean, that this change is absolutely what we need, and hopefully what's happened with Rafa might be a blessing in disguise. I was watching actually the Graham Potter interview after they lost 2-0 to Villa, and it made me think. He's not the right man for Everton either. I know he's been linked with us a couple of times when we've been between managers, but I just can't get over the mentality of the man. They play some lovely football, and then they lose a game, and he's almost sort of Sean Dyche-esque in his comments that. You know, the other team were brilliant and they're a really good side, and we've got to pull our socks up and go on to the next game. And I think you just wouldn't get away with that at Everton. And I think Lampard just really seems to have got it right, looking to get us to play good football. But he understands the club and sort of the expectation. And I think he, like you said, Lee, does such a good job of sort of tempering expectation, but also holding standards. And I don't think we've had that balance for a long time in a manager, really.
I was going to say that to you, Pete. What's your thoughts on, you know, I mentioned about his press conferences, his post-match interviews. What's your thoughts on him in terms of how he's come across?
I think he's got it perfect. I think he's spot on. I think he's a really good fit for us. You know, he was an unbelievable player. He was arguably one of the best midfielders in the world, wasn't he, you know, at the time he played. And I just think he understands the club, he understands the game, he understands, I think, the position we're in and our potential, and he's got really good ideas about to get us there. And I just think he's managing us week to week, you know, sort of perfectly. I mean, his comments, like you said, they're always measured, but they're always honest. And I think, again, the Evertonians appreciate that. You know, we're football people. You can't tell us something's brilliant when it isn't. And you know, if you continue to be ultra negative as Rafa was, again, that starts to grate on the fans and the players as well, because it doesn't fit with who we are. And I think he's shown how adaptable he is, and I hope he's given time, and I hope the players continue to play for him like they did on Saturday, because if they do, we'll have no problems at all.
It's interesting to see how he operates as well with the new director of football, who was announced this week. Kevin Selwell has come in, so former Wolves sporting director. He was at New York Red Bulls he's come from as well. So that's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because we've now brought in a new director of football since Marcel Brands part of company with the club. He seems to have a decent reputation in terms of, especially at his time at Wolves, the likes of you. Diogo Jota, he was obviously doing very well. Did well at Wolves, doing well at Liverpool. Traore came in, then Donker. You know, players like that were brought in under his watch. So now we've got that sorted out, which is really important that we haven't waited until sort of April and May, you know, with the season nearly over. We can now look to identify targets for the summer as well. And how he works with Frank Lampard and with Frank Lampard's team. And he, you know, it's certainly we know Marcel Brown's got a lot of stick, didn't he? A lot of time, you know, for certain players, and you know, what does he do and things like that. But I think it's important, isn't it, with this appointment, that he's allowed to do his job. He said it time and again with Marcel Brown, he was never allowed to fully operate as a director of football, you know, in any guise, really. You know, we had the responsibility of the academy. And I think he was almost told a lot of the times what to do in terms of transfers and things like that. So this is obviously part of this refresh and this, you know, restructure, if you like. So let him do his job is probably the message I would give. Let him work with the manager in conjunction, and hopefully it's going to be a decent relationship. And us as fans have got to obviously allow him the time as well to do his job. But he certainly comes in, I think, Lee, with a decent background, obviously in Premier League football, with a good reputation, and something which I think the fans can fully get on board with.
Yeah, it sort of came out of the blue, didn't it, when it was announced in the week, really, and a bit left field. You know, his name wasn't really linked with the job. You know, there was a few other names linked with the job as well, and you know, I know they've been doing a review in the background of the structure and everything else. So they've obviously, you know, but I believe reading reports, you know, him and Cahill have crossed paths as well. So, you know, I know Cahill's obviously been over in the States, obviously with the Red Bulls and things like that. So maybe it was a recommendation from Tim. You know, we don't know the full background. No doubt there'll be some info and an interview with the guy once he's in. But interesting appointment, still pretty young. I think he's only 38. The bit of background reading I did on him, you know, he's sort of didn't quite make it as a player. Was one of the youngest people to get his coaching badges in terms. I think he was 25 when he got all his coaching badges. He ended up doing quite a big stint with a setup of a young man training or coaching young managers in Wales. A lot of the actual people like Arteta have since been through that school that's been set up over there as well. So yeah, the guy, you know, let's see how he does. I mean, hopefully you shouldn't really have to see or hear too much from the sporting director, should you? I mean, they should be going a lot about their job quietly. And like you said, Mike, given the keys to actually do the physical job. And the key is him and Lampard. And Lampard strikes me as a guy that, you know, I don't think he'd fall out with many people, to be fair. He seems like a really likable character. And, you know, let's hope they can get their heads together. And obviously, no doubt they'll be working on summer targets already, or at least developing a list. But first and foremost, obviously, we've got to keep our status in this league. And we're in a false position at the minute in terms of the way we've been playing recently, certainly. And it's just a shame that we were playing a team of the calibre of City. We haven't got an easy game coming up, obviously, against Spurs away. We've hit a little bit of form recently as well, albeit they had a bad run. But that won't be an easy game. Obviously, Kane is starting to show things again. So, you know, that week that you alluded to there, Mike, is going to be pivotal, isn't it? It's the Wolves, Newcastle. Who is it we've got after that? Is it Brentford? I think it's Brentford, isn't it?
Brentford's the back end of the season. Brentford's our last home game off the top of my head.
Sorry, who is it? So it's Wolves, Newcastle and someone else, isn't it?
And then Watford away, yeah. So it's those sort of 7-8 days, which are massive to our season. If you can, you know, I don't want to start predicting those games, but if you can come out of them with sort of 6-7 points, you're in a much better position, aren't you? I think looking ahead, taking points off sides around you, and you feel a bit more comfortable. But it's up to the players. You know, we've seen what the players can do, how they can perform. So it's up to the players to make sure that they continue to put a shift in. And, you know, as you say, we can assess things much better at that particular point. But a long way to go. No time. Not a time for panic, that's for sure. But the next game coming up, it's a busiest week, isn't it? Again, FA Cup's back Thursday, Goodison Park, 8:15 kickoff. You thought that one up him on a Thursday night, but we're back at Goodison against Boreham Wood. Big game, you know. We've got to want to progress in the FA Cup, and at the end of the day, we've got to want to win the FA Cup. So we're going to take our final break and discuss that in about 30 seconds. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. And like I said, it's going to be FA Cup week as Boreham Wood come to Goodison Park on Thursday. I can see quite a few changes. Obviously, we've got a few cup tie players within that squad. So Van der Beek, who did hobble off yesterday, but I think it was with a bit of cramp, to be perfectly honest. He sat on the bench after the game. He didn't go down a tunnel. So he obviously can't play. Delhi can't play, El Ghazi can't play. So we're going to see a few changes, that's for sure, to that starting 11. But although obviously Boreham Wood are non-league side, Lee, we can't take them, you know, can't take them for granted. We can't take them too lightly. We've got to be professional and approach the game and look to beat them by about 5 or 6.
It just totally negated your comments at the start there with a 5 or 6 victory. I mean, yeah, I mean, look, it's at home, you know, let's be fair. You know, they've had a hell of a cup run till now. It's a great story. The cameras are going to be there. You know, we can't write them off. You know, strange things have happened in cup football. We can't write them off at all. I mean, they're going to be well up for it. They're bringing a load of fans as well, and that'll be great for them. Everton's done a great job as well in terms of, I think they've, didn't they help them with a kit, design the kit, didn't they? Because obviously the colour clashes as well. So fair play to them for that as well. And look, we've got to take it. It's a game of football. You know what I mean? It's to get to the quarterfinals of the cup. So, you know, it's not a free buy by any means. And we've got to turn up on that day. Yes, you'll probably make changes. I can see Patterson coming in for his debut at right back, hopefully. Sheamus will need a rest, ready for the game against Spurs. And maybe a few other players will get a start as well. But I think we've got to go in there and play, even though it is a team that's nowhere near City's level, but play with that same intensity. That's got to be our way of playing. We've got to overwhelm them. We've got to press them on the ball. You know, try and get Richarlison a couple of goals if we can as well. I'd want him to start actually and play up front and try and get a couple of goals. I think he's been, like I said, you know, certainly at home he's been excellent, and if we can get him a couple of goals going into the Spurs game, that'll give him an extra lift, because he's doing the other side of the game incredibly well at the minute. So yeah, for me, take the game seriously, play with the same intensity, you know, don't drop off at all, and like you said, Mike, try and come away with a comfortable victory with a few goals going into a really important game on Monday.
Like you say, with it being obviously FA Cup game, anything can happen. They're bringing a decent contingent from their neck of the woods. It is a sellout. You wouldn't expect anything less. Obviously, the Everton fans have been fantastic as ever this season in terms of the, you know, making sure the Goodison Park is packed out. So it's going to be a difficult game in that sense, because anything, as I say, anything can happen. They're flying high. You know, they won again yesterday, Boreham Wood, the third in the National League with three games in hand on the top two. You know, which, you know, win those, they could be top of the National League and looking to get promoted into league football. So certainly no mugs, you know, on the periphery of league football. But you've got to think, Pete, haven't you? As long as we are professional and we do approach the game correctly, as I say, there is going to be changes because of people being cup-tied and maybe a few little niggles here and there. We should have too much, shouldn't we, as long as I say, the attitude and application is correct.
I mean, undoubtedly. I mean, professional is the word, isn't it? Our second string, should absolutely be more than enough to beat a National League side. So I hope he just rests as many players as possible, because the focus has got to be Monday night, isn't it? And you could build a strong team, you know, Begovic, as you say, Pattinson, Branthwaite, you know, you could potentially start Townsend now that Gray's back, because it seems, at least for now, that maybe Lampard's been sort of favouring the pace of Iwobi. You know, Rondon, you know, you'd hope would be a real handful for their defence. Yeah, of course, we've not got to take the game lightly, and we've got to respect them. I mean, they knocked Bournemouth out, didn't they? So if they're good enough to beat Bournemouth, they're good enough to give us a game on the day. But yeah, rest the first 11, rest the as many of the, as the first team squad as possible, and you know, there's good opportunities here for likes of Dobbin and Onyego, isn't there?
I think there's opportunities for a few. I think I'm always wary about making too many changes, if you like. So I know, obviously, like you say, some will be forced, but the likes of, you know, play like Dobbin, he's had very little league football. I'm not really sure he'll get the nod. The likes of Branthwaite, though, Mikhailenko, Patterson, those are the kind of players which I'll probably expect to come in. The back four have played a lot of football in recent weeks, and it'd be good to see those other players get an opportunity to see what they can do against lower league opposition. But you've got to start somewhere. And I know people have been calling for Patterson to get a chance, but it's not as easy as that. You know, in the situation that we're in, if we're sitting mid table and we're doing okay, then that's when you can give, you know, these kind of players the opportunity. He's a young kid. He's got to be built up to first team football in the Premier League, and this is an opportunity for him. And I do think he'll come in, as I say. I think Mikhailenko comes in, Branthwaite, You know, the midfield is going to be changes. Be interesting to see if we go 4-3-3. Who does he put on the midfield? Obviously, we're going to have Alain Decore. Do we want to risk Decore again? You know, sort of 4 or 5 days after he's played 90 minutes after being injured. Big game, obviously, come up against Spurs on a Monday as well. So it'll be interesting to see who comes in. Will Tyler Onyango get the nod? Will he come in to that side? Who knows? But I think, like I say, the important thing for me is not so much the personnel as such, because we should have enough regardless of who starts the game. It's just the application of those players. And if we get that wrong, if we take things lightly, if we just see it as a walk in the park, then we'll come unstuck. Doesn't matter who we are. We've seen many teams over the years do it. We've done it ourselves countless times against, you know, sides that we should be beating. So we've just got to get it right. And I think, you know, a couple of goals in the first half would be nice to settle things down. And then just obviously if we can sort of get ahead and then take our foot off the gas a little bit and manage the game, then that's ideally what we need to be doing.
I think on that basis, I think we should go strong in the first 60 minutes, just try and win the game, then rest the players rather than the other way around. You know, let's say we do make wholesale changes, and what happens if it's 0-0 after 60 minutes? You know what I mean? And then we've suddenly got to start bringing on like the likes of Alan, the likes of Decore, the likes of Richarlison. I think, yes, make changes, you know, a few changes in there. But like I said before, I'd start Richarlison and try and get him a couple of goals, because, you know, that's a chance to lift his confidence a little bit in front of goal as well.
I don't think we can risk it. I mean, imagine if one of them picks up a knock.
Yeah, but Pete, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a real opportunity to get through to the quarterfinals here. You know, most of these times, these teams now, let's blitz them, try and get two or three up, then rest the players. You know what I mean? If it's 0-0, no, it's a high
relegation scrap, aren't we? We've got to stay in the league. I mean, for me, I wouldn't have Richarlison in the starting squad for Thursday at all.
No, I think we've got to go all out. You know, there's a risk getting injured full stop in footy anyway, even if you play for 30 minutes, 60 minutes or 90 minutes. So for me, win the game and then bring off the players and rest them accordingly. I'm not saying go with the same team as City. Obviously, I think, like you said, we can make... Mikulenko can start, Patterson can start, possibly Branthwaite can go in there, Andre Gomez can come in there. You know, there's a few changes there already, but, you know, for me, I think we have to take them seriously. You know, they've got to this stage. You know, it's not the first round of the cup, is it? You know, it's literally a chance to get to the quarterfinal.
I think we've got to take them seriously, but not as seriously as the league.
Yeah, what do you think, mate?
Yeah, well, you know, we all want to win the FA Cup, but I totally get Pete's points. It's a balance, isn't it? It's a real balance between the two, because, you know, the table doesn't lie. I know Frank's told us not to look at the table, but obviously you can't help it, and it gives you heart palpitations every time you do. Obviously, you've got that hope that we've got games in hand, and we've got, as we said earlier, games against sides around us. So it's a balance for me. I wouldn't go in there with the stronger side we've got from the off. I think there will definitely be changes, just because we've got to manage players. You know, as I said earlier on, a lot of those players, especially the back four with the injuries that we've had, have played a lot of football, including John Joe Kenny. You know, he's out of position. Get Mikulenko in. He'll definitely come in. You know, there's no question for me. You know, I think Patterson, as I say, will come in. Branthwaite, you could change three of the four, no problem. You know, Ben Godfrey isn't too far away. So if it's not Spurs, then I think he'll be in for the following weekend anyway. So, there will be changes. As I say, you know, I mean, who comes into midfield? It's a big question, isn't it? Because do you go with Decore and Alan? You know, does Gomez then come in the central area? Does Onyango get the chance? I think there's got to be a real balance between the two, you know, between the league and the cup. At the end of the day, if someone said to me, you can win the FA Cup but get relegated, or not win it and stay in the Premier League, for me, you stay in the Premier League. That's where we are. There's no question. And we all want to win a trophy. We know how long we've gone without winning a trophy. But that's not even a question for me. We cannot lose our Premier League status. We cannot. That would be unthinkable.
Yeah, look, I think we can still go strong, but just not make wholesale changes. I think, you know, we've just named four or five changes at the back and in midfield there. This is a chance for Lampard to look at Gomez in a free now as well. You know what I mean? Let's put Gomez in a three in there and let's see how he plays. You know, I mean, everyone's been saying that obviously he really struggles in a two because he's got too much ground to cover and into that, and he's not the best defensively. And it's an opportunity for him now, isn't it, to put him in a three. Let's see how he plays. You know, you can have a look. You can have a look at a couple of players here and see how they play. Let's see how Patterson plays. Okay, albeit it'll be against weaker opposition, but it's a chance for him to really push Coleman, isn't it? And say, look, because from what the snippets we have seen of him, he's got loads of energy. He's very direct. He's aggressive. Let's see how he plays. He might have an absolute worldie, and then he goes, oh, I've got a decision to make for Spurs here now. Now, he'll probably still go with Coleman for experience and where we are in the league. But that, you know, it's an opportunity for the lad to put a marker down, isn't it? Frank's pretty much come out and said he doesn't quite think he's ready yet. Certainly, as you know, these games actually mean something, and you know, because we're trying to stay in the league. But it's an opportunity for the likes of him and Branthwaite and even Mikulenko himself to try and, you know, try and push Kenny at left back. I never thought I'd say those words, by the way. But you know what I mean? I think this is a real opportunity for some of those players, albeit against weaker opposition. To you know, Frank will be saying to him, go and show me why I should be picking you next week.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is Andre Gomez wasn't on the bench yesterday. So is he injured? Has he just not been selected for the squad? Who knows? So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But you know, it's an important game for us. As I say, we've got important games now from every week to the end of the season. You know, Leeds just sacked Bielsa, by the way, as we've been speaking. So I'm sure now that new manager will come in and look to give them some kind of bounce. They've been in 3-4, them and Brentford are the ones I'm looking at games in hand on, looking to catch. So the back end of the season is going to be very, very important, and we've got to start picking up points. We've got to win on Thursday. You know, it'll be unforgivable to lose that game, because you want to be getting through to the quarterfinals. Anything can happen when you get to the final late of any cup competition. So we'll see. So you know, the message really is, you know, pick a side that's capable of winning the game, be professional, and hopefully come through without any injuries. That's probably the key. But let's have a round of predictions before we finish. Lee, what are we saying?
Yeah, I think, like I said before, if we go with a 70% strength side, I think that should be enough to win. But we shouldn't write these guys off. It's the game of their lives, some of these lads. They're going to be up for it. So we should have too much for them. There's loads of signs for me that we are improving in a lot of areas. So I think there'll be plucky early doors, but I'm going to go 3-0.
Pete?
4-0. 2 for Rondon, 2 for Townsend.
2 for Rondon? You on drugs?
Yeah, I'll run through the hours and say 4, but I'll go 5, just so I can be different. I think we will. We will be fairly comfortable. Great for Boreham Wood, I'm sure, to travel to Goodison Park. But listen, I've got no time for romance. Go out there, be professional, absolutely bladder them, and then look forward then to Monday night against Spurs.
Just wanted to mention quickly before we finish up, mate, the massive credit to our football club yesterday in terms of what they did for the atrocities going on in Ukraine at the minute. We all saw the scenes with Zinchenko and Mikulenko before the game. I thought it was highly emotional, actually. It really, really was. I mean, that's testament to our club, that. It makes me proud to be an Evertonian when we do that. You know, what the players did coming out with the flags, the banners that were put, you know, the banner that was put up in the Gladys was fantastic. Just a massive nod to our fans there for being, you know, classy as ever when it comes to that. Even when Zinchenko went up to warm up, he was getting, you know, standing ovation and things like that. And you know what's going on over there is horrendous, and we've all been affected by it. And you know, massive credit. I mean, Pete, you were there. We didn't make the game yesterday, but Pete, you were there. I mean, it would have been pretty emotional, I imagine. Was it being in the ground?
Yeah, it was incredibly emotional. And like you said, I think the club, they just got it so right, didn't they? And, you know, we've talked so often on the podcast about how the club have maybe got certain things wrong through no want of trying. But I think when it comes to things like this, Everton are just always class act. And I think we showed that again yesterday.
Yeah, it was unbelievable scenes, really. You know, even before the game, you saw, obviously, Zinchenko and Mikhailenko have a conversation. Zinchenko was very emotional throughout, even the warm-ups. And then when he came out, and obviously we played, obviously, the Hollies, he ain't heavy, came on, and he was crying within the dugout. Everton players, obviously, with the Ukrainian flag draped over the shoulders. And, yeah, you know, it puts a lot of things into perspective, of course, when you see the atrocities that we are seeing. You know, not too far from home, let's get it right. It's not too far from where we are. Frightening for everyone involved. You know, we hope obviously, we're not political on this podcast, of course, but speaking as human beings, we hope that things do die down very, very quickly, and common sense prevails. But obviously our thoughts are with everybody impacted and affected by what's happening in the Ukraine at this moment in time. But the club, absolutely fantastic yesterday. Expect nothing less. The banner was fantastic as well. And like I say, let's hope that common sense does prevail. But that's us for this week. We'll be back before the Tottenham game, because we're playing Monday. We'll be back next weekend to look back on the Bournemouth game, look ahead to Spurs. Massive Monday night football game, of course, for ourselves. Time to start picking up points and get up the Premier League table. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.